Ohio State Affairs.
No.
To order, it is 8:39 on the 19th of April. Let the record show that Representative Finkelstein, Representative Menard, and Representative Hanley are present. In view of the number of people that have signed in for HB 255, which relates, excuse me just a second.
We will be in just a moment.
Okay. In view of the interest in HB 255, an act relating to permanent fund dividends for certain incarcerated individuals, I'm going to move that to the top of the calendar, and I note that Commissioner of Revenue Hugh Malone is here, and I know he has a very busy schedule. So what I'm going to do is, Hugh, are you here to testify on this, on the legislation?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Why don't you come forward, sir? And if there's any, you'd like to have anyone up, else up here with you, I feel free to do so.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Hugh Malone, Commissioner for the Department of Revenue. Thank the committee for the opportunity to address my comments to House Bill number 255 relating to permanent fund dividends for certain incarcerated individuals. Mr. Chairman, the Department of Revenue supports the legislation. It would ensure that the permanent fund dividends of incarcerated felons would be available for the support, at least, of their children. Without the legislation, more than 600 children in the state would lose the dividends that are due from their parents in prison. In addition, the state would need to provide public assistance to about 1,000 more children who will lose child support formerly available from the permanent fund dividends of their imprisoned parents. This is a major concern with the law change last year, and this legislation would address that problem. I think that thought we probably have to remember that the children of people who may be incarcerated among the neediest of those receiving child support, and the permanent fund dividend is one of the only ways that child support can be received from these people. Much of the support in the law last year came from the belief that convicted felons in prison should not be able to spend permanent fund dividends. And while that is probably agreed by most people to be a sensible approach, House Bill 255 would make it a crime for incarcerated felons to apply for a dividend without the sponsorship of the Department of Corrections. The bill would protect the rights of the felons' children to child support and to the dividends, and the rights of other creditors to the repayment of felons' debts. The dividend is also often the only income available for economic restitution just for the just payment of debts of people who are incarcerated. And this legislation would make it possible for the money from the dividend to go to pay the creditors. It would set a priority that child support would be ahead of the other creditors, and I think addresses some of the issues that were raised in the law change last year that would basically prohibit the payment of dividends to incarcerated individuals. This legislation takes into account that there are people who are affected by the income sources of incarcerated people who need the money, basically. And it's, I think, consistent with the basic policy declaration in the law last year, in that it would put the incarcerated person in, the person who is in jail, would not make that person eligible to apply. They'd have to, the Department of Correction have to apply on behalf of the individual, so that it wouldn't be a situation where the person was receiving the money and their just debts were going unpaid.
Are there any questions of Commissioner Malone. Representative Donnelly?
Yeah, Commissioner.
We're on telecom.
Commissioner, are there any technical aspects? What technical aspects of this legislation are different than the existing new law that we passed? I mean, we have a new policy twist here, but what are the technical aspects of this legislation that...
I think, Mr. Chairman, I think the principal one is that under the present law, the mechanism for determining the eligibility of the dividend payments for people who are incarcerated is sort of in doubt. For example, one way that you could calculate it under the present law, I don't think the right way, but one way you could calculate it would be to count all the people who are in jail for at least one day during the year, multiply that by the dividend amount, and make a payment to somebody, public safety, I guess, under the law. If you did that, the amount of dividend money that would be transferred under that accounting would be substantially in excess of the amount that would normally be received by incarcerated felons. There are a lot of people in the jail, in incarcerated, who would not normally be eligible for dividend. They wouldn't meet the other criteria. And so that's one difference, is that this bill would limit the applications to those people who would otherwise be eligible, to do that clearly. And it would, that what that means in plain English is that the impact on the dividend fund, the reduction in other people's dividends due to this denial of dividends to people who are in prison, it would neither increase nor decrease the dividend amount that other people receive. It wouldn't affect the total dividend amount. Another technical difference, I think, is it places on the Department of Corrections the responsibility for applying for the dividends or supervising the application of dividends for people who are incarcerated. Basically, they would have to apply for the individuals, just as now, for example, the Department of Health and Social Services applies for children who are in the custody of that department. More specifically, then it would make a change in the application of the funds, in that it would provide that the creditors, first in line being child support, who have claims against the individual, would be able to in effect get at the money to claim it for debt. Those are some of the changes. Mr. Chairman, on the specific technical issues that might be raised in the by the legislation and how it would actually work, how the program would be administered from the Department of Revenue standpoint, here today is Mr. Irvin Jones, who is a program director for the Permanent Fund Dividend Program in the department, and he has prepared a program summary, which would be it might be useful for the committee members to review with Mr. Jones if they wish. Did I answer your question?
Yeah, I still think I have some more questions, but if Mr. Jones wants to answer them, that's okay.
Mr. Jones, why don't you come on forward? You can stay there until we kind of finish this questioning here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I'll have you next on the line. Could we have another chair for the commissioner, please?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Irvin Jones. I'm the director of the Permanent Fund Dividend Division. Was there another specific question? Or?
Sure.
Representative Donnelly.
Well, I guess I've got real concerns because this legislation now no longer helps the Victims of Violent Crime Compensation Board, and that was the whole purpose of the bill last year. And so this is quite a significant, this is not significant, it's a complete change from what we did last year and the purpose of it. And I know the administration ignored that legislative intent this year by by spending that money mostly on other things. There's a little bit of that money went to the Crime Compensation Board. But other than that, they spent the vast majority of it on correctional items. And I was wondering, isn't there a better way that we can facilitate payment of the child support payments within the existing system so we don't have to cut off the Victims Crime Compensation Board?
Commissioner Malone?
Yeah, well, Mr. Chairman, on that subject, I think probably committee members
Have you got your mic pushed down there?
Mr. Chairman, on that subject, I think committee members are probably aware that the amount that would be collected by, in effect, capturing the dividends of incarcerated felons is several times the amount of the claims that are paid by the Violent Crimes Compensation Board. The amount of those claims has been going down over time. And I don't remember the exact amount, but it's on a scale now of several hundred thousand dollars a year, I think on the order of three. And the amount that would be collected in this program from the people who are incarcerated, depending on how you count them, whether you count those people who would only otherwise be eligible, or whether you count everybody in jail, would be someplace in the range of, well, what were the numbers, Irvin?
Close to $2 million.
Close to $2 million, which is five or six times the amount of the Violent Crimes Compensation payments. And so, unless the legislature makes changes in the program to allow the board to make higher grant payments or claims payments, they can't use all the money in the program, and that's why the administration had proposed using some of the money in other programs.
Mr. Chairman. Well, first of all, Irvin, I'd still like you to answer my actual question, but to the commissioner's statement, are you saying that, Commissioner, that they have not been limited at all by their funding source in the Crime Compensation Board? Because my understanding is that they adjust their claims to try to last the whole year fairly and prorate what they pay out to victims. They by no means fully compensate victims, but they do partially compensate victims, and they only partially compensate them because they don't have the money. So this question of they can't use the money, I don't think that's accurate.
Mr. Chairman, I don't pretend to be an expert on the Violent Crimes Compensation Board. I do know that it was represented to me, both by the Department of Corrections and people from the Department of Public Safety, that no place near the total amount of money that this present law would generate could be used in the program. It could very well be that that the board could use more money, and I'm sure that the representative is right in that. The exact amount or the maximum amount that they could award under the present law, as my understanding, is substantially less, a fraction of what this program would generate. And basically, that's where everybody else is diving for the money, you might say. From my own perspective, using the money to I'm just speaking now for myself, using the money to compensate the victims of violent crimes probably makes good policy sense. If the program collects money in excess of that, it certainly seems to me that other just creditors ought to be paid out of that money. They're owed the money that I collected. And I think there is a special problem when we deal with the child support issue. And the reason that is not just because I'm sensitive to it, because it happens to be operated out of the Department of Revenue, but because if we don't collect those payments, if we don't collect that money, to offset the AFDC payments, the state pays out of the general fund a portion, I think half of the amount that will be paid to the aid for families with dependent children. And so it costs the state directly in money to do that. And those are related issues. I can't argue, and I wouldn't, with a basic concept that we should have a compensation program that adequately, you know, if the state can't protect people, at least they should have a program that does what they can to make them whole afterwards, and I certainly would argue with that.
Okay.
Representative Donnelly?
Well, I'd sure like to get a more accurate number than some fraction before we take a look at changing this program. Because some fraction is not good enough information for me to make a decision on in what we cut here, because I think they could use a lot more money than we actually get. And you may have been informed by those departments, which have never been big fans of victims of crime to start with, that they are only going to use some fraction of it, but that doesn't mean much to me as a policymaker. I think they could use a lot more money in the Victims of Crime Compensation Board. And because the administration made a political decision to basically not comply with the legislative intent and put the money into other places in the department so that they could reduce their budget, I mean, I'm not getting the information. I think I need to make a rational decision here.
Commissioner Malone?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, the Department of Revenue is not in a position to provide that information. If we ran that program, I certainly would have the information available to you, for you. It is my understanding that regardless of the question of prorationing of the claims amount, that under the current law and the limitation on the types of claims that may be paid, that the present program could not pay out but a fraction of the receipts. I would like to just return to two basic issues that are the primary concern of the Department of Revenue. First, in the dividend program itself. Right now, people who, well, up till the time the laws changed, the people who were incarcerated in prison were treated the same as everyone else in the dividend program. And that meant that some of them were eligible to receive dividends and some aren't. And in fact, there's a fairly high percentage of people who are in the who are not eligible for the reason that they come up here and get in some sort of trouble, and the next thing they're in the jug, and they're not Alaska residents. So those people who applied and were eligible were paid a dividend. And one concern I have, and it's a major one, that if we deny eligibility to incarcerated felons, which is a basic policy call the legislature might make, and it's not something that I particularly want to comment on, but we have to have some mechanism for determining eligibility. If we don't do that, and if we instead count all the people who are in prison or incarcerated felons some part of the year as de facto eligible and subtract from the dividend account an amount equal to that number of people multiplied by the dividend amount for the year, that will have the effect of reducing dividends for everyone else in the state. That's what it will do, reducing below what they would have otherwise did. That's a major concern that I have, because I think that it represents a siphoning off of money for non-eligibles through a mechanism that basically stabs at what is I call the equity in the program. So I think that we do definitely need a mechanism for making sure, or coming as reasonably close. We can't get down to the last person, but that within a reasonable percentage, we're paying about the same number of claims or payments that we otherwise would have been making. Otherwise, the dividends for the rest of Alaskans would either be increased if we're paying less to the people in the prison, or decreased if this particular change in the law means that more money is paid out in the form of dividend payments for people in jail than those who would normally be eligible. That's the first issue. The second is that there are people, and we're principally concerned with the children of the incarcerated persons, who have, at least normally, a legal claim on this income, either because of some just debt or because of child support, which is a just debt. And that issue should be addressed in any those issues, I believe, should be addressed in any programs of this sort. And
since this legislation addresses both those things, the department does support it. There are other issues which I think other departments could probably speak to more with more information, but in the discussions on the legislation, that includes the need to provide some sort of gate money for people when they get out of jail, and then of course the whole issue of the correctional programs themselves, and certainly the violent crimes compensation. The first two, making sure we aren't paying out more money under this program than would otherwise go to people in jail, because if we do, that's going to reduce everybody else's dividend. And secondly, that there be some mechanism, at least for the child support, some mechanism to, if there is some remnant of these funds, to collect it for the, allow people an opportunity to collect it for just debts that might be owed by the people in jail.
Thank you, Commissioner Malone. I'd like to move on. We've got about one, two, three, four, okay. Two people online. You can go ahead.
I just want to say that I never got an answer to my original question,
right.
And that's okay.
What was your question, Representative Donnelly?
My question was, can't we find a different system so that we can still fund the victims' crime compensation through this and then provide for the child support mechanism also without cutting the victims out of this entirely like this does?
Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Malone?
Mr. Chairman, I think what that comes down to is a matter of establishing a priority for the use of the funds, and I certainly think it could be done. So my answer to Representative Donnelly's question would be yes.
Thank you. Maybe we can shed some more light on it. I noticed that the sponsor is here, and let the records show that Representative Donnelly and Zawacki are present. I have signed you. Thank you very much. And just in case there's any more questions, would you just stand by for a few minutes, please?
Thank you, Mr.
Thank
Chairman.
You, sir. I'd like to recognize Representative Mark Boyer, the principal sponsor of this legislation. Representative Boyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I apologize for being late, but I got tied up in HESS and with one of your members here. But I appreciate the opportunity to have what I think is going to be a good airing of this whole issue. I, for one, felt a little frustration in a vote that I cast last year for HB 248, the bill that set up the mechanism for taking the dividend away from convicted felons. And I didn't feel comfortable with it last year, but the tide was working against felons, and it was politically expedient, I felt, at the time to vote for the bill. It would have been, I think, it would have been tough to defend at home a vote for felons. But I wasn't comfortable then, and I remain uncomfortable with the fact that the action we took last year affects a lot of kids in the whole process, and kids that I think have become innocent victims by the taking of the dividend. And that's why I introduced the bill, so that we could re-air or revisit that entire issue. And I think that I can get to Representative Donnelly's concern here. In fact, I proposed an amendment, which I'll be offering at some point here, that I think more tightly structures the way that the dividend monies would be allocated out, and in fact take care of, in large part, the Violent Crimes Compensation Board, which actually only compensates some victims. It certainly doesn't compensate all victims, and so I have a particular problem with that. But what I'd like to do, if I can, is just read a letter that I didn't solicit. That was a letter that I saw in the newspaper at Fairbanks Daily News Miner from April 14th. And if I can just read it into the record, I think it speaks to the reason why I've introduced the bill. And anyway, it just says, to the editor, I applaud Mark Boyer on his thinking through the issue of permanent fund checks for incarcerated individuals. I'm an inmate at FCC, that's Fairbanks Correctional Center, and have been incarcerated for quite some time. During my incarceration, my permanent fund dividend has went toward helping support my daughter. By taking my permanent fund dividend, the end result is that she suffers. I know that was not what the new law was intended to do. If I was gaining personally, I would agree that my permanent fund dividend should be forfeited. People often get tunnel vision when it comes to the punishment of criminals, hurting anyone who gets in the way of achieving that goal. I agree that I should be punished. I don't agree that the innocent around me should be made to suffer for my wrongdoings. I made them suffer enough. There should be tight guidelines placed on permanent fund dividend checks to inmates. Inmates should not have control of the checks. The money should go toward court-ordered child support, restitution of any victims, voluntary child support payments coordinated between the Department of Corrections and the offender. There are many families of inmates in this state that depend on that extra check to get them through the hard times. Punish the offender, but please not the families. Sincerely, Randy Davis. Mr. Chairman, that literally gets to the core of the issue, or the quick of the issue, and certainly why I introduced this bill. And actually, it reminds me of that letter. Reminds me of a movie that was made in 1968. To digress just for a moment, it was the only pro-Vietnam War movie made during the war. It was a movie that starred with John Wayne, and I remember the last scene of the movie where John Wayne is standing on the shore. And he's got the little Vietnamese boy with him, and the Vietnamese kid said, "Geez, am I ever gonna? Are we gonna be safe? And, you know, are we gonna grow up and all that kind of stuff?" And John Wayne says, "Well, son, you know, you're what this war is all about." And if Lloyd Benson were here, he'd probably say, "Well, I knew John Wayne, and you're no John Wayne, Mark Boyer." But and then, but the point is this: I think similar that at some point there are things that the issues are all about, and the issue that we're all about in this legislation are the innocent victims of a policy that was popular to enact last year. And I guess the whole issue has become sticky because you've got some people that are motivated now by greed, and those people are the Violent Crimes Compensation Board. They see the bill that we passed last year as a way to fund their existence and what they're all about, and that's okay. I mean, greed is a strong motivator, and I'm not suggesting it's a bad thing here. And then you've got the people in the legislature who see it as a way to shift general fund dollars that are scarce to another funding source, and that source is the permanent fund dividend. This is really the first time that we'll have used dividend money. We can't decide to spend the earnings of the permanent fund, but now we've decided to spend the dividend money for general fund purposes. And so anyway, there's a greed amongst legislators for that. And then there are people here who have passed legislation or hope to pass legislation whose fiscal notes live and die on the ability to take permanent fund dividend money and fund those fiscal notes. And then, of course, there's the other interest, and that is retribution. You know, let's kick the felons. Let's kick these folks who have wronged society and by taking their check away. So you've got those kinds of motivations behind the bill last year and those kind of motivations that continue to build behind the bill that we passed last year. But why should we revisit that whole issue? Well, I think there are just a couple reasons. One is, of course, that the convicted felons' money that used to go for child support no longer goes there. And you've got a large number of kids, somewhere in the neighborhood of 500 to 600 kids, who don't otherwise qualify for AFDC or some other kind of public support, public assistance payment, that are literally being denied money that was going to them a year ago, or going to them before the passage of this act. That another reason why we need to review this issue is that the Violent Crimes Compensation Board can only compensate victims of violent crimes, that we leave out the categories of all other victims. I mean, the nonviolent victims of crime, the people who've been victims of theft or burglary or embezzlement or those types of nonviolent crimes, and those people aren't taken care of here. They were being taken care of under an opportunity to go in and attach permanent fund dividends or collect restitution through collections of dividends. And also the money, as has been mentioned by the commissioner, that would go to the Violent Crimes Compensation Board exceeds their needs. Now, I'm not totally confident that we couldn't be putting additional money in there, but Representative Donnelly, I think, suggested that the governor has played a political game in deciding how the money might be spent. But we're the people who make appropriations, and if we decide not to put over $1 million of this $2 million into corrections, we can do that. We can fund the $2 million through the Violent Crimes Compensation Board if we chose to do that. There doesn't appear to be the will to do that on either side, Mr. Chairman. But that's clearly our prerogative and not the governor's at this particular point. And the last thing is that we're saddled with general funding the gate money to those folks who leave the prison system, and I don't think that that's something that we should be paying for. The gate money, I think, under the Clery decision is around $150 per prisoner, and that's clearly not enough money when someone's walking out. All we do is give them every opportunity, or provide them every opportunity and every need, to go out and rob someone again or otherwise commit another crime by not providing them with enough money to walk out the gate and not have to commit crimes. But the issue is whether or not we punish felons at this time by taking their permanent fund dividend, and in that taking, or in that punishing, whether or not we continue to punish everyone else around them, all those innocents that we're punishing, their children, other victims, other predators. Or do we allow those innocent people to stand in line and perhaps stand in line and be able to as the bill that I've introduced allows for, stand in line and receive some kind of compensation. The risk, of course, that we run by allowing some more fair way of approaching the distribution of the dividend amounts, the fear there is that we're going to let some guy, some felon, actually accrue a benefit. And that seems to be the motivation against passing a bill like this. Somehow, some guy who might not have a dependent child, who might not have had a court-ordered restitution against him or her, or who might not have fines owed to the state, somehow that person might accrue a benefit. And there are some people, I'm sure, around this table who feel that even if you give one convicted felon $1 permanent fund money, that's reason enough to punish the other victims that are innocent in this whole process. I don't happen to agree with that. I think that you run the risk, but it's a risk that's small given the relative benefit to other victims, a broader group of victims, by providing that the check be available, as we've outlined in the bill. And again, that's why I've introduced the bill, and I'd be happy to answer questions if people have them, but I think that kind of gives a good summary of why I'm here. Well,
one of the things that I might hear, we're at 9:13 now, and we've got a pretty full calendar today, but I've moved this up to the top, and there are people that have testified. One of the things that I would like to do is move the legislation on. I think it certainly is public policy that needs to be addressed. I have a strong feeling, as Representative Donnelly does, regarding the victim, you know, the first person. However, in deference to his concern about it, and the two of you are pretty sharp people, if you want to go in the back room and work out some type of amendment that can deal with this, we can come back, put that before us, and in the meantime, collect the other testimony on it, unless there's an objection from the committee on that.
Well, Mr. Chairman?
Yes?
I think some significant amendments I'd like to offer before I want to vote on the bill.
Well, what I'd like to do, is it something that you and Mark can sit down now and...
Well, I'd be happy to try to do that.
Why don't you use my place in the back room there and see if you can come up with an amendment or two.
It's really going to be difficult since we don't have any decent answers from some of the questions we had earlier.
Well, let's try.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I share the same concerns of Representative Donnelly. I think we're pushing this bill out too fast. We've just sat down. We haven't even heard the testimony of people who want to testify. I have some serious concerns with it. I also, you know, feel for the victim of the children's, but I certainly don't feel for those felons. I had no problem voting on that bill last year, and I would vote on the same bill this year. But I think this mechanism here is totally flawed, because we're trying to do good for the children, yet we're also setting up the program now to set up a bank account for the felons who don't have pay for child support. And so I have serious problems with this entire concept of this bill. And I think to try to go in the back corner and talk for 10 or 15 minutes and come out with some questions without listening to public testimony.
Now, that isn't what I've said, Zawacki, and you know that. What I want to do is...
Chairman, you said you're going to pass the bill out.
No. Did I say today? You've seen a policy of moving legislation on down here. We don't sit on stuff just because somebody doesn't like it or what have you. I think this deals with public policy. It's been overlooked, whether you one side or the other. All I wanted them to do was, if they're going to work out an amendment, do it. Now, if we would prefer not to do that, but I'm not going to have it ragged around forever. In other words, I'd be glad to appoint a subcommittee of you, him, and sit down this afternoon and work it out. All I want to do is just not rag it around, that's all. And I respect your feelings on the thing. You know how I operate. I don't like to mess with legislation that just to sit here and play with it or what have you. But I respect the strong feelings on both sides.
Could I ask a couple of technical questions?
So I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to defer to that and go back to this. But I am going to put a subcommittee on the thing, which I'd like to have meet today, so I can have it back before the committee tomorrow. And I realize it's
okay. If you got a time frame problem, Mr. Chairman, I sure understand that. I've just got some technical questions. There's things
you go right
in here
ahead.
I really don't understand.
Okay.
Representative Boyer, what happens if I'm trying to understand this? It seems like when we did the legislation last year, we went through the problem of how do you get the prisoners to apply for their dividends. And this bill, it still seems necessary that they sign these applications. What happens if they refuse to sign the application?
The money just accrues to the permanent fund dividend account. You can't force people to sign. It's a voluntary provision in the bill. And so if you find a convicted felon who isn't interested in signing, the money just accrues to the dividend account.
Well, unless the felon had an interest in the money going to somebody, or like a child support, well, they should just refuse to sign all the time, and then the victims would never have any shot at this money.
Mr. Chairman, I think that you're probably going to find that there are some rough, tough, grisly types who aren't interested in ever doing any good for anybody or anything, and those people probably aren't going to sign. My guess is, you know, you're going to have 5 to 10% of the felons who probably fall into that category, and then all that happens is that everyone else's permanent fund dividend is potentially enriched by their not, as it is with anyone who doesn't file for a dividend, enriched by the fact that they don't apply.
Okay. My next question, just how this works, is I'm trying to find in the bill where it sets out what the priority is.
That's actually only partially referenced in the bill, and it's referenced on page, the bottom of page 2, section 4, where it says AS 4323065A is amended to read. That begins to set out the priority. What you don't see there is the rest of the permanent fund dividend statute, which is in section B, which sets out the priority. B and that's B, which sets out the priority. And I'll just read B if I can for the record. It says an exemption is not available under this section for permanent fund dividends taken to satisfy 1. Child support obligations required by court order or decision of the child support enforcement agency. 2. Court-ordered restitution. 3. A court-ordered probation fee. 4. A debt owed by an eligible individual to an agency of the state unless the debt is contested and an appeal is pending or the time limit for filing an appeal has not expired. C. Claims listed in B of the section have priority in the order listed over other claims on a permanent fund dividend. So that's where we reference it, but it's not reflected. We could have restated it here in its entirety. We chose not to.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, we've got people that have been waiting online to testify. We've got Sherry. You're here to testify on both 255 and 277. I guess she stepped out. Okay. Online, we have cheat sheet here. Linda Langston from Anchorage. Are you online, Linda?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I am.
Yes, and Linda, we've got quite a few people that would like to testify. I want you to get all your points across, but if you could possibly keep it to a few minutes, it would be really appreciated. If not, why, as long as you need.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will try to be brief. Members of the committee, my name for the record is Linda Langston, and I'm the director of the Child Support Enforcement Division, a division within the Department of Revenue. We have in our caseload 1,702 children whose fathers are incarcerated felons. 640 of those children are obligee, who are the beneficiaries of an existing court-ordered child support obligation. These are children, by and large, whose mothers divorced their fathers at some point before the father was convicted of a felony offense. And in these cases, enforcement actions have been taking place within CSPD, including, in some cases, attempts to locate the absent parents. Often, in some cases, these felons will be fathers who have actually abandoned their children. We have two classes of cases which we are required by federal and state law to enforce. Those are AFDC cases and non-AFDC cases. For the AFDC cases are those where the mother and the children have gone on welfare. We are quite rigidly required under federal law to find the absent parent and collect child has almost without exception are part of our difficult to enforce caseload. It is hard to collect money from them to pay at least a part of their court-ordered child support. And those PSE dollars, that $800 payment in 1 month, has a substantial impact on the child's and the family's standard of living. It may not seem like very much money to us, but we know, to us as individuals, but we know here at CSED and understand our caseload. And the reality is that most of the children we serve, particularly the children of these felons, live in poor or low-income working female-headed households, where an extra $800 in a month can make a difference in the family's ability to do such things as buy needed clothing, make a needed visit to the dentist or the doctor, pay higher winter utility bills, buy Christmas presents. It frankly is pretty basic, and CSED is continuing to look for some mechanism that would prevent this money from escaping from the families that need it pretty desperately.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Donnelly?
I have to contribute. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, ma'am, this is Representative Donnelly. I'm discussing with Representative Boyer just before your testimony. He suggested I ask you about difficulties that you've encountered in trying to construct an alternative system utilizing the existing system of accessing these funds that would provide a fund for these families and these children in need to directly access to replace the money that they're losing through the garnishment of these checks, permanent fund checks.
I'm sorry, Representative Donnelly, the transmission was breaking up badly, and I'm not sure that I heard everything.
Okay, let me try this again. Representative Boyer and I were just discussing, since I personally favor the existing system of accessing the dividend checks, there seems to be a real serious flaw in the proposed system in that it requires that the incarcerated individuals sign the checks. If they refuse to sign, the money's not available. And so they're only going to sign if they have some interest in signing. The only time that would happen is when they knew the money was going to their families or someplace else, and that would cut the victims and totally off, I think. So if we left the existing system in place, why couldn't we create some sort of fund or access that money the state already collects to compensate the folks out there? Existing system to do that. But what I'm asking you for here is some creative thinking. This is the legislature, and we do have the power to change the laws. So we have a little bit different situation than yours. And what I'm asking for is some creative thoughts here on how we could set up a system under the law to allow you to access that.
Well, one of the things that we were interested in last year, my predecessor, Holly Flute, I think, had in mind it, it would be, you know, she was sort of turning over in her head the idea of creating the conditions, the statutory conditions under which PSED could actually apply for a dividend, you know, on behalf of the children, presumed for all those who were incarcerated felons that had child support cases in our caseload. And yeah, I wasn't here at the time, so I frankly don't know why that particular result wasn't pursued, but my understanding is that there may have been some legal or constitutional difficulties with it. I frankly can't come up with a creative solution on how we would do it. I mean, ideally, what we'd like to do is say, if you've got incarcerated felonies in our caseload, we go out and we apply for the dividend on its behalf. Take the money and pass it through to the family. That would seem to be the simplest and cleanest option. But I guess it has to pass legal muster, and evidently the idea didn't last year.
Mr. Chairman, I think and I've looked at this thing a number of ways, too, and tried to come up with some artificial construct by which you could have some access and receive, you know, have some people apply and some people not apply. But unfortunately, the law says you're not, that convicted felons aren't eligible, and therefore you cannot apply. You can't apply, so we can't quite get there. And maybe an adjustment to the statute would allow us to get there. But you can end up with a situation that allows that some prisoners are more equal than others. And that's the difficulty, is we have an equal protection problem. You can't have some prisoners more equal than others, or some prisoners, to put it another way, who have more access to something than other groups. You can't discriminate in other words. And perhaps the Peter Frelick with the Attorney General's office should speak more specifically to the constitutional problems with providing that, the kind of access that you've just heard about, why that isn't an easy thing to do at this particular point, because we've looked at it. Looked at a number of ways that you might access the fund, and it just isn't easy because of the inability to treat prisoners differently. Mr. Chairman, if you'd like, the Department of Law is here and could perhaps address some of those issues.
I like your idea.
Peter, since you were brought into this conversation, why don't you come in and sign in? I want to remind that we're approaching 9:30 now, and I've still got people to testify here, and also Marsha Payne and Nikiski.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I'll be very brief then. My name is Peter Frelick from the Department of Law, and that what Representative Boyer has said is essentially correct. We cannot allow only prisoners who have children or who have other creditors or who owe their victims court-ordered restitution. We can't allow only those prisoners to apply for a permanent fund dividend and have that dividend be held in trust for them, and not allow the other prisoners who don't have kids and didn't have any debts when they were imprisoned apply for the same benefit. That's basic. Basic equal protection. We just don't see how that kind of distinction can be justified. In answer to Representative Donnelly's question, though, I mean, how do you access this? What we're really talking about is how do we get money that used to be paid for prisoner dividends and now is not going to be? How do we get that money to some of these other laudable purposes, the Violent Crimes Board, child support enforcement? And remember, child support enforcement, of course, is not really an agency. I mean, the money doesn't go to the agency, it goes to the kids. The agency just helps them, the dividends that they grab. But so it appears to me that the way, really the only way that we can move that, access that money that's sitting in the dividend account is appropriation. And as Representative Boyer suggested, the governor doesn't do that, of course. As you all are well aware, the legislature appropriates, and the legislature can start appropriating money from the permanent fund dividend account to whatever, to violent crimes. There's a lot of political and policy considerations involved there. But you know, that's how you access the money. If you want to use it, through the dividend program without just direct appropriation from the fund, but rather funnel it through individual applicants, there's got to be some transfer of title, sort of, like even if it's just equitable title, which it's sort of is here in this in Representative Boyer's bill, where the dividend is held in trust. It's the money has got to go from the dividend fund to, at least in theory, to the prisoner, being held then for the prisoner by the Department of Corrections, so that everybody that has a shot, everybody that has a claim to it, has a clear shot. They're holding it out there. The victim of that person, that prisoner, is going to have a restitution, court-ordered restitution, almost invariably. They can grab it. The kids of that prisoner can grab it. Whoever has a claim to it can grab it while Corrections is holding it out there and trying to make it easy for people to grab. But, short of that, I mean, if you don't want to pass it through the prisoners themselves, then you're going to have to directly appropriate. Intent language isn't going to do it. I think we've seen that the intent language from last year's bill, I mean, it didn't accomplish an appropriation. It said we intend that the future legislature should appropriate.
Representative Handy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Fraley, you said directly appropriate. Then determine a method that we could directly appropriate money from the permanent fund to the Department of Corrections, that some of the people who would attach the permanent fund would have access to that?
Yes, essentially. I mean, if the intent language that we have from last year's bill can be implemented, it says it's the intent of last year's legislature that all future legislatures appropriate from the dividend account to the Violent Crimes Compensation Board. If that intent can be implemented, then it does require an appropriation to do that. Then a similar appropriation from that dividend account can be made for any other purpose.
Mm-hmm. Just to follow up, I guess as you were speaking, I was wondering if we could, looking at the mechanics of this and the realization that some people will sign up, some wouldn't. Could we look at the number of incarcerated felons over the last 5 years who have applied and come up with a number or a percentage or something, and then state that X number of dollars would go from the permanent fund just as a mechanical kind of thing based on past 5 years' experience or something? Could we, by statute?
That's the problem with that is that they used to get...
Dave, you don't...
I was just thinking that...
Well, whoever got, even if they got the money, who got the money? I mean, how many applied and got the money? And still continuing in the statute that we passed that the felons are no longer eligible to receive it, but that we could appropriate money from the permanent fund to the Division of Corrections for these specific purposes. And that money, the amount of that money would be based on past, the historical perspective, past percentages, past numbers. Look at 5 years and come up with an average. Each year, X number of people have applied. I don't know how many felons, but if it's $2 million, whatever that is, divided by 800, that the average number of felons who have applied over the past 5 years has been 650 or something. I don't know what it would be. And then, so therefore, the legislature could appropriate the permanent fund dividend for 650 or something. I don't know. Would something like that work without going through the mechanics of having people sign up?
Mr. Chairman, I think that it would only work on an annual basis. I don't think that it could be set up in a permanent way because of appropriations have to be made for the fiscal year and dedication of fund prohibition and so on. But I think that's a sort of a logical approach. But the problem is that it might be. I think it would be hard to lock it in for the future.
Representative Zawacki, you had a question.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Well, I think several of us are kind of talking about maybe another way of looking at that. If we didn't change the present, the bill that we had last year and the plan that we had, a lot of us by the letter of intent wanted it to go to the Violent Crimes Compensation Board, but it's not doing that. And as you're saying and others are saying is we can, as the legislative body, if we took the responsibility, appropriate those monies to the Violent Crimes Compensation Board Also, could we not set up by statute an amount of that money to go to the child support agency to possibly cover the child support that is not being paid out there? One, you're leaving the felon out entirely, because I know the law, you've talked to me in my office, that once you allow one felon a permanent fund dividend, you have to, by law, allow everyone to receive that permanent fund dividend, or those who want to apply. But can't we set up, again, by appropriation, and designate exactly where those funds that are presently going into the general fund can be? And we can take care of the child support, we can take care of violent crimes that some of us are concerned about, but yes, we have to become responsible as the legislators and set it up by statute. Also, the dividend program itself is set up by statute, it's not constitutional. So I think what Representative Hanley was touching on, you know, we could find and try to find that mechanism to show an estimated amount of how many felons there are and the dividends, times the dividends, make sure that we don't go over it. But I believe that, you know, I think there's several mechanisms we could look at along those lines.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Boyer.
I would just suggest that, you know, what you might be suggesting is certainly within the realm of possibility. We could appropriate whatever X amount of money is from this permanent fund grab that we're taking, and we could appropriate it to the CSED, and they could do some elaborate backflips and try to determine which of the people that they have court-ordered child support payments from are in fact in prison, and then come to the legislature and say, well, you know, because everyone's different. I mean, there's not a uniform child support enforcement amount, so it's different. So they could go through this elaborate exercise. It'd probably take another 15, 20 employees to do something like that. I mean, take a lot of people. I'm serious. It's not an easy thing to come to X, whatever X is. But they could come to the legislature and say, we know what X is now, and X is $1.5 million or $500,000 or whatever. We need you to appropriate it. The difficulty is that there is so much competition for these dollars. The competition is keen for these dollars. The corrections wants it. Violent crimes compensation wants it. Everybody who introduces a bill that has to do with violent crimes wants it to pay for their the fiscal note. So, I mean, the competition, the line is long. The line is long. And that's the problem that I see, is the line is so long that the kids are never going to get the money. The kids have been, the money that they were receiving has been taken from them, and the likelihood of us appropriating money to CSED, even if we could come up with a mechanism where they could somehow determine what the nexus, the connection between a kid who was getting it, who's not getting it because their father is in jail. And if they could make that connection, they'd be at the end of the line behind lots of other legislative priorities for receiving that appropriation. My guess is we would never get 21 votes on one side or 11 on the other to build something like that into the budget. And that's the difficulty, is the competition is keen.
And just a comment from the chair, having listened to this, you know, we, as you said, the line is long. This is the only state with this type of program there is, and what we ought to focus on, I see it as two phases to it. The children out there that are victims themselves, and as Dave said, the person that's had the living tar beat out of them, what victims' compensation is a part of state law in many states, and I think maybe we ought to be addressing ourselves to not trying to go around a left-handed method to solve it, to come right out in front and deal with that particular problem. I mean, it's an observation that appears to be developing from this. I've got one more person on here to testify, and I don't like to have people sitting.
I have a real quick question for Mr. Fraley.
Go ahead.
Mr. Fraley, you talked about the due process and equal protection problem. What if the state, by statute, said it would pay unpaid child support up to the amount of dividend checks for a particular year, and then the state, or set a fixed amount that it's approximate to that to compensate these folks who have lost these checks? And then the state would have a claim against the individual who failed to pay the unpaid child support. Now, since these folks have access to everybody but the felons' PFD checks anyhow, almost everybody else would get that amount anyway. So the only people that would fall in the crack would be the people who had debtors who were incarcerated, and the state would be getting that money anyhow through their checks. And then you wouldn't have a due process problem, because everybody who didn't get paid would get paid. And it wasn't based on that criteria that you had somebody in jail or not.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Donnelly, I think that sounds like it probably would be fair or pass muster, you know, equal protection, due process-wise. It would require money. I mean, the state would never get all the money back, certainly, so it would just, you know, it would require an appropriation. The cost would have to be covered, but it strikes me that, you know, at first blush anyway, that seems like it could be a possibility.
Why don't you remain at the table? We have Marsha Payne in the Kiski. Marsha, my apologies for keeping you waiting. Would you come on in, please?
Mr. Chairman, I don't believe she's dialed in yet. She had some problems
getting online. She is not? Okay. Is there anyone else online to testify? If not, we can continue with the testimony here. See, Kathleen Strassbaugh?
I'm on 277, not 255.
All right, okay, Kathleen. And Irvin's already been there. Nola Kapp?
Thank you. I hope my voice doesn't give out. I had this flu. My name is Nola Kapp, and I am the administrator of the Violent Crimes Compensation Board. And I am here representing the board. The board did put in a position paper, and I don't know if all of you have that. The board, of course, strongly endorses the concept that criminals should pay for this program.
That's item six. Go ahead, Nora.
We were one of the first 11 states to have a violent crimes compensation program. There are now 45 states that have a compensation program. So we were one of the forerunners of the states to have it. More and more states are paying attention to victims, as we feel it should be. About 40 of the states out of the 45 states fund their compensation programs with fines and penalty assessments. The state of Alaska is unique in that their constitution prohibits dedicated funds, so the compensation program cannot be funded that way in this state. If we did not have offenders, we wouldn't have any need for a compensation program. The board, of course, feels that child support payments are important also. There is a question as to some of testimony this morning I heard was that some of the dividends would not go to the offender's family but would go back to a state agency to offset the AFDC paid to these people. And I don't know how much that would be, but it doesn't sound as though the permanent fund dividend would go to the offender's family right from the child support agency, that if there were AFDC payments that permanent fund would go to health and social services or somewhere. I don't know. But anyway, obviously, some of the money does not get to the offender's family anyway. We are not even listed in this bill as being, the victim isn't, as even being one of the persons that should be eligible for permanent fund dividends. They list child support, debtors, probation fees, which, by the way, could be in kind. It's not necessarily a $25 fee that's paid in money. The offender can work it out. But we're not even listed in any of this, and I think the victims need to be heard. Victims are mostly unheard of. They're not verbal people.
Representative Boyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The money, you were right, partially right on how people who are on public assistance would be treated. People are who are on public assistance wouldn't necessarily receive the benefit of the dividend because they're on public assistance, and part of that money would go to offset the general fund payments to those individuals and the federal portion of that, the assistance to those individuals. What we're talking about are is the group of people that aren't on some kind of public assistance, and that is somewhere in the neighborhood of 600 to 700 individuals who would benefit from this, who would receive the full benefit, who would in fact receive the check, where the state or the federal government aren't already providing some level of public assistance because they're not categorically eligible for AFDC or those types of things. So there is a group, but you're absolutely correct, there isn't a larger group actually that wouldn't receive the actual benefit. But on the other issue that you raised, and that is the fact that the victims are not specifically addressed, that's correct, but it's not that they're not addressed in this bill necessarily, it's that they're not addressed in the permanent fund statute that lays out the way that you can access someone's dividend. And I do have an amendment, which I would like to propose at some point in the future on this, that would put the Violent Crimes Compensation Board in line as an entity or an individual who would be able to access the permanent fund dividend of an incarcerated felon. So I recognize the absolute necessity of that, and I've been an advocate for funding for the Violent Crimes Compensation Board on the Finance Committee in the last 2 years anyway, and support funding for violent crimes compensation now, and so we'll be proposing an amendment in the future on that.
Representative Donnelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's a funding level of 201, I guess, in the information provided us for the Violent Crimes Compensation Board. Do you feel if you got $200,000 a year, that's all the money you need to compensate the victims of violent crime in Alaska?
No, sir. That 201 was simply the increment that we had asked for. The administration did not, the compensation program is not funded from PFDs.
Right. What's
the full funding?
Yeah, my question is, if you got all the money, if you could have all the money you wanted to do your job, to compensate victims of violent crime, rub your hands together and think now, without the governor's office telling you, don't ask for this money, how much money would you ask for?
Okay, we spend approximately $653,000 on grants. That's money that goes directly to victims or providers, hospitals and doctors. Our administrative costs are approximately $133,000. That's for salaries, for travel, for hearing officers' fees, contractual services, all that. The rest of it goes directly to the victims or the providers of victims. We are currently out of money in the compensation program. We get $258,500 of grant money from general funds. This year we got $149,000 from federal funds. So we had around $401,000, which is gone. We have approximately 64 claims pending, and we don't have any more money.
Well, my understanding is the PFD thing raised about $2 million that was there to access. You've identified that you're already out of money, and it looks to me like you said 653 is the total amount of your program. How much more money would you want if you wanted to pay all the 64 pending claims that were legitimate? Can you give us a ballpark figure?
Okay, I can give you a ballpark figure in that I think that we should have grant money at around $650,000 to $700,000 in administrative costs. So it would be approximately $850,000 if you funded it, which obviously we have never said we needed all of it.
You just, because of fiscal constraints, right? I mean, not policy constraints, but because you're realistic about what money you can get out of state funds.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to point out that the commissioner's testimony was that some fraction would be all they'd need.
Well, that fraction, Mr. Chairman, looks like about half.
What, 50%?
Mm-hmm. Which the administration seems to really ignore.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Boyer?
You know, absent the emotionalism that is associated with that kind of a remark, we have the ability to appropriate. It's not the governor. The governor, I think, made an appropriate call, which is that perhaps we shouldn't have any agency dependent on something which may be taken away tomorrow. And I don't want to bring up the issue of court challenges to last year's law, but there are a number of challenges that are pending before the courts to the law that we enacted last year. And it's probably an appropriate way to approach making appropriations generally is not to make any one agency totally dependent on a funding source which may be jerked away at any given moment. So, you know, the wisdom of any appropriation, we can always question it or challenge it, but perhaps the governor made the right choice in not making the violent crimes compensation totally dependent on a funding source which may disappear. But we can, and we control the purse strings. We can make an appropriation, and we've got a finance committee that has chosen not to do that. That's our finance committee, and I think it's the finance committee probably on the Senate side has taken the same tack, that they're not making this appropriation. But if it's the wisdom of this committee or the interest of this committee, we can certainly make that recommendation to our finance committees that they make this Violent Crimes Compensation Board totally dependent upon this funding source. I don't think it makes good sense to do that right now, given the fact that we don't know the outcome of potential litigation here. I think after we find out whether or not this previous action withstands court challenge, then you can make that kind of commitment of a funding source. But right now, I think it's premature to make that, given the fact that we are, in fact, being challenged. And just, I was reminded here that I didn't speak totally correctly when I mentioned that victims aren't direct recipients, that all court-ordered restitution goes directly to victims. And the court-ordered restitution, I think, is in the Permanent Fund Dividend Statute, the third call, or it's a second call on the fund. So those dollars all go to victims of crimes, and all crimes, not just violent crimes. So.
Thank you, Representative Boyer. I have one more person that would like to testify, and she's been very patient. From the Alaska Women's Lobby, Sherry Gall. Thank you for your patience, Sherry.
Thank you.
We got about 5 minutes. I want, it's obvious we're not going to be able to handle the rest of this calendar before the session, and I know most of you have got busy schedules. What I would like to do, Sherry, just a minute here, I'd like to get a subcommittee moving on this, Representative Donnelly and Representative Sawacki. Both of you appear to have strong interest in it, and I don't want to dilly-dally around with it. I'd like to get moving on it, and I'm going to count on you to coordinate them and get whoever is necessary. I'd like to see this thing back before me tomorrow morning. I don't want to start having legislation in this committee back up. I think this is it's pretty important. It looks like it's going to need one of these Solomon decisions. You know, I mean, who is the battered child or the battered child? So I think that it's, I'm glad the legislation before me, it alerted me of another hole in the net that we're not taking care of. And I think that both of them should be dealt with. So I would like to see this committee here. Obviously, it's going to judiciary. I'm sure there'll be lots of discussion over there, but I would like to see this committee send out something, add a little bit of intelligence and wisdom and common sense to it. So with that, Sherry, if you could go ahead and testify. And Mark, our staff here, Dennis Burns, and people are available, and you can use it for a subcommittee meeting at any time. At your convenience, if you want to. Sherry, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Sherry Gall. I'm representing the Alaska Women's Lobby. And I know that the time is late, so I'll just be very brief and tell you that we very much welcome the introduction of this legislation. We were very concerned about these children last year when House Bill 245 passed. I think that the fact that there was an obligation to these children for support that was completely ignored in the rush to try to take something away from the felons last year was an error. And I appreciate the fact that we're coming around to take a second look at that. The figures are that there are about 700 incarcerated felons who have child support obligations. It amounts to something like $650,000 that these children are not, that is not available to the children. I think that felons who do not have child support obligations, that the next priority down is court-ordered restitution. Not every victim of a crime is a victim of a violent crime. There are people who have been robbed who cannot go to the Violent Crimes Board for compensation but can get court-ordered restitution. If the money isn't available in their PFD checks, then that court-ordered restitution can't be paid. I think that the children are really innocent victims, that the children of felons have an extra burden. They have to live with the shame of having a parent incarcerated for some crime against society, and many of them are now suffering the extra burden of living in an impoverished single-parent household. Some of these children, about $250,000 worth of the child support obligations, would be going to families who are not on AFDC, who are completely left out. This is the only money that they would be able to get in the way of support from their parent who is in jail. And I'd like to see something be done to accommodate the needs of those children. Thank you.
Thank you, Sherry. Are there any questions? Thank you very much, and thank you for your patience. All right, session's 10 o'clock. We're going to go ahead and sign off. I would, as I said earlier, I don't want to be repetitious on this, but let's get cracking on this so I've got something in front of me tomorrow morning. My apologies for the rest of you who were here to testify. I didn't think it was going to take that long, but this legislation that was on the calendar today, I'm carrying over tomorrow, and it will be right on the top of the agenda. Thank you very much, and House State Affairs is adjourned at 10:02.